Physics of the Human Body. These are podcasts from the University of Utah's Department of Physics and Astronomy.
This is Richard Ingebretson from the University of Utah's Department of Physics and Astronomy. And we welcome you today to the Physics of the Body series. Today we're going to be talking about energy metabolism in the body and how the body uses energy. A very important part of our body's metabolism is it is in fact just how we use sugar from sitting or walking or even thinking. All of the activities in the body require a significant amount of energy to function normally. We use foodstuffs primarily to continue living, thriving, and growing. If you look at our food, there are three kinds of foods. We think of them in terms of sugars, fats, and proteins. All are very vital, but sugar is our main energy source. It can use fats and proteins, but sugar is really what we use for sugars. And we usually divide our sugars into two groups, the simple sugars, which are sometimes called monosaccharides, although generally we don't use that term as much anymore. We use the term simple sugars. Sometimes we use disaccharides, which are multiple units of monosaccharides. The simple sugars are glucose, fructose, galactose, or some of the ones that we normally think about. They have the general formula of C6H12O6, meaning carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. These sugars occur naturally in fruits and plants as a result of photosynthesis. This is the process where organisms absorb energy from sunlight, and it's used to produce sugars and these other organic compounds such as fat and proteins. Most carbohydrates that we eat are converted into glucose during digestion. This is the form of sugar that is transported around the body in humans in the bloodstream. Carbohydrate is a term that we often hear about, and this is consists only of carbon and hydrogen. The term is synonymous with saccharide, which is a little bit of an older term, but still being used. Most people today use carbs is the term. In the past, it was monosaccharides, disaccharides, oligosaccharides, which were used. The term really is synonymous completely with carbs. Most of these sugars end in the term OSE. Glucose, as we said, is the great monosaccharide. Carbohydrates perform numerous roles in our body, usually for energy, but they can be used for cell structure, and they can be used in DNA, such as ribose, for the structure of DNA. When we eat foods like bread, meat, and vegetables, they are not in a form that the body can use for nourishment. Our food and drink must be changed into smaller molecules and broken down. Digestion is the process by which this happens. It involves mixing of the food, movement through the digestive tract. The chemical process varies somewhat for different kinds of food. It takes around 24 hours for food to move through the body, and the whole digestive process to actually occur. There's a lot of process that goes on in digestion, from using the pancreas and then using the liver and the actual mulching of the food in the digestive process. Food that contains a lot of energy that is just waiting to be released, and the body is very, very good at taking energy from the food we eat. The body absorbs about 95% of all the energy stored in food. After eating a meal, the food that we eat is oxidized, meaning it loses electrons. And it is electrons of where we get our energy. Now, we don't normally think of it that way. You don't go to the store and buy electrons. You don't think of it, but electrons have a lot of energy. It's the potential energy that they store. The process of oxidizing food or obtaining electrons is the way that humans harness energy from the food we eat to do the work that the body needs to do. The oxidation process takes place in the cells of the body and requires oxygen to accept or take electrons from that food. It is called the metabolic pathway, but sometimes referred to just as metabolism. This process begins as soon as we consume food in our mouths, and the saliva actually begins the digestive process. The fluids in the digestive tract really begin breaking down large food molecules into manageable sized molecules. These molecules will ultimately be broken down to release many part of the substances within the body. But perhaps the most important substance that we get from our digestive process is glucose. Glucose is just absolutely enormous and huge in our body. The rate of energy production from the metabolic pathway is called the metabolic rate. Because the metabolic process requires oxygen, oxygen consumption increases while it is being performed. Glucose is C6H12O6, and it is the most common sugar and by far the principal source of energy from our body and for our brain, which uses a never-ending supply of glucose. The oxidation reaction is glucose plus oxygen gives us water, carbon dioxide, and just a lot of energy. And ATP is the form of energy, and ATP can be thought of this way, and that is that if you think of boiling water, and we know that if we boil water, we can turn a wheel. But in order to turn the wheel, the water has to turn into steam. Well, we can do the same thing with sugar, and we use the particularly glucose. We can use the word we burn glucose, and the glucose can then be used to turn a cellular wheel, or if you can think of it that way, just like a wheel of a tire, you can do cellular work. But in order to do cellular work, you have to have that intermediary, such as steam from water. So water turns into steam, turns a wheel. Sugar is burned and turns into ATP, which then turns the wheel of work in our cell, if you can think of it that way. So ATP is the big energy source of our body. It stands for adenosine triphosphate. And cells require chemical energy for three general type of tasks. One, to drive the metabolic reactions that would not occur automatically, to transport needed substance across membranes, which is really important, and to do mechanical work such as moving muscles. ATP is not a storage molecule for chemical energy. That is the job of carbohydrates, such as glycogen, which is stored a storage form of sugar, and fats, which also store sugar. When the cell needs energy, these molecules are converted into ATP, which then transports the chemical within the cells. The process to create ATP is insanely important, and it is what we call our metabolism. And it does not occur instantly, but rather through a process called sugar metabolism. And it's made up of three parts. And the three parts are really important. First is called glycolysis. The second is called the Krebs cycle. And the third we refer to as the electron transport chain. The basics of these parts are not hard to understand. However, it is important to note that even as we discuss this today, it is very, very superficial, when in reality, there are very, very, very complex mechanisms at work that happen. Glycolysis is the first step in this process, and it really means splitting of sugar. Glycolysis is a metabolic pathway itself that is made up of 10 steps, of which take place in the cytosol, the outer part of the cell of living organisms. And this process converts one molecule of glucose into two molecules of pyruvate, generating energy in the form of two net molecules of ATP. So as you do glycolysis, and it happens pretty quickly, we get two molecules of ATP. Four molecules of ATP are actually produced, but two are consumed in the process. It does not require oxygen, so it can function under anaerobic conditions, meaning no oxygen. So that is really good. So we don't have to be breathing really fast to create two quick molecules of ATP. It happens very, very quickly within seconds. That is important because it means that if you have to move quickly for whatever reason and you don't have oxygen but need ATP, you will get it quickly, but only in small amounts. This is also the reason why people will often look for a candy bar late in the day so that they can get a shot of sugar rapidly, giving a quick blast of ATP. The end product of glycolysis is a very important molecule called pyruvate. And then pyruvate then is moved into the Krebs cycle, which is the second step of metabolism. It occurs in the mitochondria of the cell, and it's named after the scientist who discovered it, Dr. Krebs, who actually won the Nobel Prize for that. The Krebs cycle does not occur very quickly compared to glycolysis and will not happen unless there is abundant oxygen present. Pyruvate does not enter the Krebs cycle directly. Instead, pyruvate advances forward in a coenzyme, which we call acetyl-CoA. And these coenzymes in the body play a huge role. There's a number of them. But pyruvate is converted into acetyl-CoA and then moves into the Krebs cycle. This is one reason why it is important to warm up when exercising so that you can get oxygen to the cells, allowing this important step to advance, because it will not advance unless there is abundant oxygen. Unlike glycolysis, which has a distinct starting and ending point, the Krebs cycle has no starting or ending point at all. It is a cyclical process. This cycle churns around and around two times for each molecule of acetyl-CoA, and that gives us two molecules of each time it goes around. So the purpose of the Krebs cycle is to extract electrons from the molecules that originally were in glucose. So electrons play just an enormous role in our in energy in our body, and the foods that have electrons are the really sugary ones that you know about, carbohydrates. These electrons will ultimately enter the final phase of metabolism and create ATP. The electron transport chain then is the third process of creating sugar, and it takes these electrons and converts them into ATP. This also occurs in the mitochondria of the cell, and during this step, the electrons that were extracted from the molecules in the Krebs cycle enter this final process. It is called the electron transport chain. The electron transport chain is located in the inner membrane of the mitochondria of every single cell. The more mitochondria you have, the more readily you can create ATP. The purpose of the electron transport chain is to harness the energy of each electron to make that ATP. The movement of the electrons through the chain releases energy that creates ATP from ADP, adenosine diphosphate. This process needs a lot of oxygen, more oxygen than you can imagine, to accept these electrons after they've given up their energy. In fact, all of the oxygen that we breathe is basically utilized in this final step of the creation of ATP. We can store sugar, but we cannot store oxygen. Therefore, you need to be breathing a lot. And one of the reasons that humans are very good at running long distances is that we're able to absorb a lot of oxygen. That is, oxygen is a much needed process in the electron transport chain. So the more oxygen you can get, the more energy that you can get. The electron transport chain yields around 34 molecules of ATP, but the exact number of ATP produced depends upon the conditions of the cell. So glycolysis occurs when there is no oxygen present. The Krebs cycle and the electron transport chain only occur when two conditions are present. One, there has to be abundant oxygen, and the body must be exercising or performing some sort of action. The byproducts of sugar and metabolism are carbon dioxide and some water. This means that the very important equation we mentioned earlier is that we get our we eat food to get our energy, but we breathe oxygen to accept the electrons. And then we breathe out carbon dioxide, which is the big waste product of the transport chain. A couple of the caveats in this process. We have what is called the oxygen debt. This is the ultimate. Oxygen is the ultimate electron acceptor. The blood needs oxygen continuously for ATP to be created in the electron transport chain. The amount of oxygen required is determined by how quickly the tissues are using it. If oxygen is available for the tissues, then ATP will always be created. If oxygen delivery is unable to keep up with demand, then the electrons get jammed up in the electron transport chain and the process basically stops. Fortunately, though, cells have a way to avoid that incredible disaster. In a creative way, they convert pyruvate into a substance called lactate or lactic acid. This is an enzyme byproduct of this conversion, which moves in the 10 steps of glycolysis. It's around step six, and it moves that forward, rapidly creating two ATP molecules. That is, pyruvate is converted into lactate, which then forces step six to create two more ATP molecules. This will give a person a rapid burst of energy, and when there is little oxygen present. An example would be a person running rapidly after a bus. Energy is provided by glycolysis through the production of ATP via the creation of lactic acid. After catching the bus, the person is completely out of breath and will be for some time. The heart rate will be high, as well as the lactic acid production, which is converted into pyruvate. The next day, the runner's muscles will ache to a certain extent because of the lactic acid burns the tissue. So the ability to create ATP in this manner allows muscles and other tissues to continue working while the availability of oxygen is low. However, this does not mean that we can live without oxygen, because that's what this presumes. For one thing, a tiny amount of ATP is created, only about 5% of the ATP that is normally used by the body. This production of lactic acid is not good for cells. It leads to muscle cramps and burning. It also has a tendency to leak into the bloodstream, thereby interfering with proper cell function. So the body has to get rid of the lactic acid soon as oxygen becomes available. As soon as the amount of oxygen returns to normal, lactic acid is converted back into pyruvate, which then moves forward normally into the Krebs cycle. So the process of converting lactic acid back into pyruvate has the name the oxygen debt. You'll notice this after a short run or a burst of exercise when you run out of breath, and then for some time your heart rate remains high as the body converts lactic acid, back into pyruvate. When exercising, eventually people will become fatigued to the point that they cannot exercise any longer until the oxygen debt has been addressed by resting and breathing deeply. Deep breathing allows the body to reoxygenate the blood, making more ATP and break down lactic acid. So again, an adequate rest period, it will be possible to engage in physical activity again, although people find that they will be fatigued more quickly after a round of exercise, unless they've recovered completely. In review, if a person is exercising, has glucose but no oxygen, when the body forms lactic acid to create a limited amount of ATP for a brief period of time, but then the lactic acid has to be turned back into pyruvate and through the regular metabolic pathway. So what happens if the body has glucose, but not enough oxygen, but is not exercising? In other words, if you have glucose and you have enough oxygen, but you're not exercising, what happens with all the sugar you're eating? For example, when you sit down, watch TV, and a lot of carbohydrates such as potato chips, in this situation, the body will not create ATP since it's not needed. It's very selfish and will not do that. It will store the ATP instead. So it will take pyruvate and acetyl-CoA and convert them into fat and then possibly into proteins. In this manner, the body stores energy for future use. The fat is the storage form of energy. And so if we aren't exercising and are eating sugar, the body will store it as fat. And that is something that we've known our whole lives. The opposite occurs when the supply of glucose is scarce and the body needs energy. The body can actually break down fat and even proteins and turn them into the metabolic pathway to be used as energy. And so if it's always good for people who are exercising to have a little bit of fat on their body, maybe 10% or so, so that you have energy even though you're not eating. So the sum of this is very simple. If you eat carbohydrates without exercising, the body will create fat. If you exercise without eating carbohydrates, the body will utilize fat. The final comment then is, how much energy do we need? Even when we are at rest, we consume energy. This rate of consumption is called the basal metabolic rate, or the BMR for short. This is the amount of energy needed to perform minimal body functions, such as breathing or pumping the heart under resting condition. It is sometimes referred to as the resting metabolic rate. In order to keep a constant weight, an individual must consume just enough food to provide the basal metabolic rate, just to exist. The metabolic rate depends upon the thyroid gland by and far. This is the main way that the body regulates our metabolism. This makes store hormones and regulates the heart rate, blood pressure, body temperature, and the rate at which food is converted into energy. Thyroid hormones are essential for the function of every cell in the body. The thyroid gland is located in the bottom of the neck, right above the sternal notch. The second factor that determines metabolic rate is the body temperature. And the third factor that determines that is our body size. And therefore, large animals such as elephants have huge basal metabolic rates. Humans are not very efficient at energy. However, usually about 90% of our energy is lost to heat. This is in contrast to home furnaces, which are about 95% efficient, where we lose about 90% of that. So when we exercise, we need more energy, and so we have the exercise metabolic rate. And depending upon how much exercise you're doing and how efficient you are, you will take your metabolic rate and multiply it by some factor, such as 1.1 or 1.3, even 1.5 or 2, depending upon how much exercise that you need to determine how much energy you need during the day. So you take your basic metabolic rate, and then you multiply that by some factor to determine how much energy that you should be eating during the day. This is the basic discussion on the basic metabolic rate, the exercise metabolic rate, and of course, the metabolic rate, which converts glucose or its storage form of glycogen into glucose, and then glucose pyruvate, acetyl-CoA, which takes electrons out of the food and then converts that to create a very, very important molecule, ATP. So this ends the podcast on energy metabolism. I hope it helps. And as always, we thank you for listening.